point, which is the governance action plan.
No, this is really exciting. I'm really excited by this, and I'm really sorry for being a sad muppet for being excited by this. What you've got in your pack, paper F1, which is a big chunk of slides that have come from the presentation. This was from the most recent SIPFA Barnett Waddingham autumn seminars for local pension boards and officers. This is the officers' working pack. Is this what you had as well?
Similar, I think, yeah.
So,
the chap who came here.
Gerard. So, everything that we do as a board, you do as a board, is driven by the Pension Regulator's Code of Practice 14, which sets out the kind of nine key areas of activity that are required to properly govern and administer a pension fund. And then subsequent to that, the pensions regulator carried out a deep dive of 10 pension funds, which resulted in an engagement report basically saying these are key areas of good practice or poor practice and recommendations for people to improve. So what SIPFA and Barnett Waddingham did was take the deep dive report and link it into the code of practice to identify where there are areas of cross-pollination, and for each of those areas what the principles are, what the details are, what the cohort review says, and then what questions that we need to consider at our individual funds to see how we do that. I'm not proposing to go through that in a great deal of detail, but what I was thinking of doing is potentially doing either a briefing session or part of the next pension fund committee to the pension fund committee on this governance framework to an extent. Yeah. And what I've then done to try and consolidate everything together and look at where we are in terms of our own governance is look at the SIPFA knowledge and skills framework, which basically says all of the bits of area that we need to know, the code of practice, look at our governance compliance statement and our governance action plan, and try and pull together a consolidated list of things that we need to be considering in terms of how we change our governance framework and how we improve the standards of governance and administration, and try and cross-reference those into the various pieces of guidance and statute and regulations and things. So what you've got in paper F2 is a blimmin' long summary action plan, which doesn't actually have everything in it, possibly, may have too much in it, and is definitely not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. But as part of making sure that we are applying appropriate standards of governance and administration, and we've got the right work plan and we've got the right resources and everything, these are areas that we've already identified in our own documents in terms of our governance compliance statement and our action plan that we need to deal with. These are areas that we may be doing a little bit of, but the various other documents are saying we might need to do a bit more. And so I've tried to pull it together to sort of say, this wouldn't make us perfect, and we're not dreadful at all the stuff we're doing at the moment, but actually this moves us on that continual journey to deal with all of the various changes that are coming through. And since I put this paper together, we've had an internal audit report from our internal audit service on the pensions admin system, which supplements some of this. And as I say, that good governance phase 2 report has just come out, which I circulated around to you guys yesterday, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Which actually puts a lot of meat on the bones around the way that the board is separate from the committee and the way that it needs to be appropriately resourced, the constitutional issues that we were talking about, and all of those things that we've been talking about. So it's great, more support. So my plan, even since we published these papers, is now scribbled all over and updated and various other things to consider. But just to sort of say, I think this is our next stage, our next step forward in the way that we run the improvements that we're going. And a lot of it is engagement between the board and the committee, and by getting the committee to buy in.
I mean, do they have something similar for their training? And
No. But it's been recommended now. We have recommended that they do the online training, but I'm not sure how many of them have done it. I think demonstrated by the potential need to almost cancel last Friday's pension fund committee meeting, and the issues that we've had with rescheduling next month's pension fund committee meeting. There is there's areas of concern in terms of the way that the scheme manager is doing its responsibilities, which is, you know, referring, that's why I referred to Jeff and to Chris Ward in terms of the pension fund committee, and we've been engaging with the way that the board is operating, etc., etc.
The scheme manager is used to provide training for pension funds on a regular basis.
The fund managers did,
So they probably get more training than we have, surely.
They did, probably. But there's no. This is the issue that I've got at the moment. There's no statutory obligation on pension fund committees to have training.
We always used to come in early and do an hour's training or whatever, and then.
Yes, Reg, we did.
Virtually everyone.
Yes, Reg, we did.
And they don't do that anymore.
I've tried to make, that's why I'm trying to make the afternoon sessions after the pension fund committee meeting. What we've got at the moment is we have a committee that doesn't want long meetings. We have a committee that doesn't want long meetings, so therefore we're having to have twice as many short meetings to get all of the business done.
But now they don't want twice as many meetings.
Because they're too many.
Don't want any meetings.
So, part of, so again, and this is really where it's very quite difficult for me at the moment, because this action plan is kind of scratching the surface, because we've already got, there's lots more in the code and all of these pieces of documentation here that we are already doing that are good enough to get us by. These are areas we've identified ourselves as we're not doing quite as well as we could. So there is a lot to do. What I'm trying to do at the moment, and forgive me, it's on this one of these pieces of paper, is to look at, is it that one? Yes. The 5-year committee work schedule that basically says over the next 5 years these are all the things that we've got to do. And some of them are replicated because we're looking at annual reviews of things and annual requirements to do annual benefit statements and annual accounts and stuff. But there are big things that we're not doing because we only have to do them once every 3 years, or we only have to do them once every 4 years or whatever. Valuation, review of policies, etc., etc. So what I'm trying to do is put together a schedule of these are all the things that we need to do. This is the plan for a 4-year committee cycle, and this is the level of commitment that we need to have to actually get to get everybody really to buy in, to say this is the amount of business we need to do, this is the amount of meetings we need to have. Either we have 4 long meetings that you all commit to coming to, or we have 8 short meetings that you all commit to coming to, or something along the other lines that we review completely the way that we run the pension fund and we do it differently. Not suggesting that in any way, shape or form, but it's so what I want, what I need to try and get to the committee's attention is that yes, we can have 8 committee meetings a year if that's what you want. But actually, this is the implication. This is what it means, because we are working absolutely frantically to literally walk out of a pension fund committee meeting, and I get an email from Megan saying, the next meeting's in a month's time, can I have your papers?
Well, yeah, because you've doubled your
workload. I've doubled my workload, and I've doubled Megan's workload, and in between those two, when I'm not having a pension fund committee meeting, I'm having a board meeting. So I've got 12 months' worth of meetings, literally walk out of one and start right, finishing the papers for the next one. So I'm almost 2 meetings ahead of myself in terms of work scheduling, which isn't really helping me. But it's also not being helped by the fact that I have 3 committee members turn up. And to an extent, I was running the risk this last meeting of having more people from Hymans down than I was going to have elected members, which is not very positive. So it's just trying to pull that together in terms of making sure that we've got the right framework and the right understanding. There's an awful lot of stuff supporting that,
yeah,
in terms of good governance, in terms of knowledge and skills, in terms of pensions regulator, in terms of guidance. All of that sort of stuff is coming together. And so we need to have that commitment at all levels, from the leader of the council and the chief executive, through all of the statutory officers, through the pension fund committee, through the board, through the admin team, through the lovely administering support lady that's in pensions, who sends out emails reminding people that they've got to check on whatever it is that they've got to check on. You know, so we've all got to buy in, and we've all got to work towards the same thing. So what I'm trying to do is pull everything together. So at the end, which is why it's really important that we had the committee meeting in December to have this kind of conversation. So I'm really happy to take comments and questions on this on this proposed plan. And as I say, it's not going to happen tomorrow. All of it won't happen tomorrow. But over the next whatever plans timetable we have, we will be in a much better position to have the necessary resources, the necessary plans, policies, processes, documentation, that we can actually be proactive in terms of preparing for changes, rather than being reactive and having to, you know, firefight to get to where we need to be.
Is there a level for core at pension committee?
Yes, three.
Three.
Yeah. Out of seven. Yes, and I struggled.
Yeah. And, Tracy and I had a little bit of discussion after, and it quite marked how little engagement they have with administration and governance issues, and how they always just attract a butterfly to a flame and walk to a flame about investment. I mean, they're in a way living in the past, that they consider themselves, an investment panel almost, you know, but that's the exciting part of it. It's going to be difficult to get engagement with them. I mean, that report to recommendations very heavily say they've got to be engaged.
Yes.
And it's not just you presenting the policy and then rubber stamping it because it's admin or it's governance, they're not that interested in it. They need to take an active part in forming it.
Yeah.
If there's anything that the board can do to help with that, possibly through the knowledge and skills, because I think the one thing I made a comment in here under it is that there's not a line about individual assessments. I think there is. I've put individual knowledge and skills assessments.
1.2 on page F31.
What is it?
Individual training plans to be developed for all board and committee members and officers. And then individual and collective knowledge gaps to be identified. So it is in there.
Yeah, okay.
I hoped. Sorry.
I mean, maybe it's something that, because we've undergone the training, maybe we can engage with individual pension committee meetings, set up one-to-one meetings with them and go through, do you realise what you have to know?
Yeah.
Maybe work
and
on
I think,
an individual basis.
I think, to be honest, that would be really helpful as we come up to, and I'm really conscious of the fact that in 2021, which isn't really that long away, we've got another load of local elections. And in 2017, we had 7 out of 7 new pension fund committee elected members. And we had to start again. So what part of my action plan in my head in terms of the 5-year work plan is to actually come by May 2021, which is when we have our first post-election new administration pension fund committee, is that that committee meeting is an induction meeting. And it has these slides, it has these policies, it has the list of documents, it has, and I'd like to engage the board with that in assisting in delivering some of that knowledge and understanding, and building a work plan and a development plan to say these are all the things that you need to know, these are the training, and part of the work planning and the agendas that we've got in the last item is to actually start thinking about how do we put those workshops together. If we're going to have 8 committee meetings, we're going to have 8 training workshops as well. How do we put those together? How do we balance that over a 12-month period of things that we need to do every year, but also over a 4-year committee life cycle that says over that 4-year period, we will have learnt this, this and this. This is when the valuation comes, so you've got a whole heap of valuation training.
Yeah.
But you've also then got standard governance, you've got risk, you've got knowledge and understanding, you've got conflicts of interest, you've got breaches and complaints and all of that sort of stuff, that we can actually build a proper review of the nine areas of the TPR's code of practice and linking that together. And using the board's knowledge and the admin team's knowledge and, you know, Megan's knowledge in terms of democratic processes for the committee and all of that to bring it together into a comprehensive, as well as using the advisors to deliver those trainings as well.
Makes sense, definitely.
So did anybody have any other comments, sorry, on the action plan? Because the next stage after we've agreed that these are kind of the key areas that we need to look at, or if there's anything missing, is then to start looking at where our priorities lie and who takes ownership. I mean, I had a conversation with Matt and Claire Master this morning in terms of a lot of stuff that the admin team are doing in terms of iConnect and data quality and comms work and all of that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And how we report that back to you as a board and to the committee as a committee to say these are the things that we're doing. So, sorry, I've witted a lot.
I think it was more about how we gel everything together so that we're all working as one rather than as I'm doing my admin bit, Joe's doing the finance bit, mm-hmm. you're doing your board bit. It's about how do we take it forward as a combined effort, all of us, so we understand what everybody else is doing and what everybody else's roles and responsibilities are.
Mm.
And we were also talking about the structure of the team and how we take that forward to mimic some of this code of practice 14.
The responsible lead officer and keeping out of budget council budget freezes and things like that.
That's what we were talking about this morning.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. The conflicts of interest to Jeremy, I think I've talked to you about possibly the board helping out with that too. I mean, maybe getting some, you know, draft ideas or even putting a draft conflict of interest policy together to look at.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something I can take either meeting 2nd of December with my Unison colleagues so I can network the mass and who's, you know, get information from them, possibly even get thoughts from Hyman.
Yeah.
Because they must have something and then maybe start pulling something together with
and
that. Because the conflict, I mean, this is all geared to the board, but the new guidance.
This was written before this came out,
I
have
I
to
know.
Say.
But you know, that is recommending that the guidance should change so that the committee does not follow the democratic conflict of interest policy, that it's unique and it should.
And I think this is also linking into the review that Jeff's undertaking in terms of the constitution, because there are a lot of things and a lot of our policies, currently the terms of reference for the board does say the conflicts of interest policy will be as for that contained in the council's constitution.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it shouldn't be. We should have a separate one. And the same for, I can't remember, there's a couple of other things in there that say the code of conduct will be applied to that's in the council's constitution. Well, actually, it probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
So we need to sort of kind of work out all of the policies and stuff that we need and then have, is it right? Should it be referring to the council's constitution? Which it might be, that there are some, like gifts and hospitalities, for example, is the same. But conflicts of interest and registers of interest and declarations of interest, absolutely. Reg, to an extent, is covered because he has to do that as an elected member, so we can use Reg's declaration of interest and you'll find you don't have to declare anything else. But actually what we're asking Barbara and Tracy and Trevor to declare shouldn't be the same as an elected member, because you're not dealing with property issues and land issues and planning issues and things like that. You're literally dealing with the governance and administration of a pension fund. And the fact that you're members of the pension fund is a complete irrelevance, because that's actually why you're appointed to the board. So it's just working out what we need to have, and again, you know, getting that best practice. What was really frustrating to me in the TPR's deep dive was it mentioned these are areas of good practice, this one fund did this, but it didn't say which fund, or, you know, for information,
so
contact
yeah,
this,
yeah.
and this
no,
is what it means.
Yeah.
They probably couldn't for...
But
I
think this was one of the questions
yeah.
that we were asking, I was asking at the pension conference that we went to, is could there be a signpost somewhere? It doesn't have to be public, but if we ask SIPFA, for example, TPR said this was a good, this was really good, we like the look of this, who can we talk to? Could they point us in the direction?
Yeah.
And it's that sort of the sharing of best practice.
I
so
mean,
I think
we'd
yeah.
be happy to share it, I think.
Yeah.
Else.
No, and I think I don't think anybody is saying they won't share it. It's just not knowing
yeah.
who
yeah.
it is we're asking
yeah.
to be
yeah,
able
yeah.
to share stuff. And again, you know, a lot of my contacts are through Access,
yeah.
and so I only see what Access does. I don't necessarily see what somebody in Northumberland does, or you know,
mm.
I do because Gerard shares it with
well.
Me. But so. Yes, absolutely. Conflicts of interest is one of those things. I think a lot of it, we will need to link with what Jeff's doing. We'll need to link with what Matt's doing in terms of the admin team, and we'll pull everything together into some kind of comprehensive plan. But if you've got thoughts and plans and ideas as to how we can take it forward, absolutely, please do let me know, because then I can build them into my plans, and then it's less work for me to do.
Okay. Sounds good. So moving on then to the valuation update, it's a verbal